Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi there, this is Martina Navratilova, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on a day when Roger Federer reminded us of his majesty. What an extraordinary performance he has just put in to beat Andy Murray, who was playing a really, really good match. And it means that Roger Federer will face Novak Djokovic once again in the Wimbledon final. My name is David Law, part of the BBC Radio 5 Live tennis team. I'm joined by Catherine Whittaker, who's on the Live at Wimbledon team. This is the Tennis Podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We are supported by BNP Paribas, the bank for a changing world, and Catherine Whittaker. Wow.
Wow. Have there ever been two more dramatic or competitive straight sets matches? I don't think there have. I mean, look at us. We're utterly exhausted and on paper, two straight set semi-finals. But I mean, if ever a scoreline has not told the story of a match, it's particularly the second one, but also the first one as well.
Absolutely. Obviously, Novak Djokovic defeating Richard Gasquet. There were some good moments in that, but there was always the feeling that there was an inevitability about the way it was going to end up. Not the case on paper and the way the match started between Federer and Murray, because Federer served first and immediately Murray was out of the blocks. He hit one lovely topspin lob. But then Federer just went into a mode that I honestly didn't know he had in him anymore. I mean, I'm not sure that Roger Federer, even after the 17 years I've been watching him and had the privilege to experience his tennis, I don't think I've ever seen him play better, ever. And I just didn't think what he did today was possible anymore. The guy's nearly 34.
I know, well, I can tell you Mats Wilander agrees with you. He said instantly upon the conclusion of that match, that is the best tennis match Roger Federer has ever played. And at the age of 33, with everything that he's done, with everything in his private life where he finds the motivation from, having four kids, etc., etc., the context of having just performed probably the best he ever has done on the biggest stage, the superlatives run out. I don't think words can do it justice. I mean, as I said in an earlier podcast, my brother sends me a little text with his assessment of how Federer played. And I think it was after one of the early rounds, he said, low-level God mode for Federer today. Well, today I got a text saying, wow, it turns out Federer has a level above God mode. And I think that sums it up. I mean, I was going to say sublime there, and then I just thought that's not enough. It was pretty much the best tennis I have ever seen. And it was really interesting in that I watched Murray's post-match press conference, and there were very few questions people could ask about sort of decisions and things he chose to do throughout the match, because none of that match was decided by Murray. He played really well, but he had no agency in that match because it was just Federer being brilliant. And Murray was as good a foil to that as I think anybody could have been today. Federer was unbeatable.
I mentioned at the start that Federer was put under just the ever so slight bit of pressure in the first game. But then what was notable throughout that first set is the first serve percentages of both players. I think at one point I made a note that of the first 28 points of the match, only two were missed first serves by either player. That's how well they were both serving. And Andy Murray alluded to that at the end of the match in his post-match press conference. He said, that's the best I've served all week. He lost in straight sets. And, you know, they got close, didn't they, in that first set to four games all. And then Federer just ramped it up, put the pressure on, asked the questions and delivered.
He did more than ask the questions. You keep sticking the microphone under me and I'm failing for words because what he did was extraordinary. I mean, all I can do is yet again churn out the wisdom of Mats Wilander, which something really interesting that he was doing throughout the match whilst we were watching off camera is he was commenting on every single shot that he thought had specific Edberg influence in it, and there were so many. He said that's a shot. So often he was saying that is a shot that Federer wouldn't be hitting if it weren't for Edberg. So he was commenting on the technique on the backhand, completely different, particularly on the backhand return. There were a couple of backhand down the line returns. He said Federer didn't have that shot before Edberg, and so much in what he was doing out there was Edberg influence. And he said, I mean, he's obviously great long-time friends with Stefan Edberg, and he said this will be one of the proudest moments of his career, not just coaching career, of his career, what he and Federer achieved today.
Well, I got to speak to Stefan Edberg about 10 minutes ago on BBC Radio 5 Live, and I think the first question I asked him was, were you surprised? Was that even a surprise to you, how well Roger Federer played? And you could see in his body language the pride that you just mentioned there, but he was taken aback that Roger Federer at this age against that level of opponent could produce a performance like that. It was basically flawless. The second set is the one that I got chance to commentate on. It was 57 minutes long. It finished about 2 hours ago. I still feel like lying down. You know, it was so exhausting trying to keep up with the two of them because Murray was just fighting tooth and nail for all he was worth. And that 10th game, which I think included five set points for Federer, and somehow Andy Murray managed to fight through those. He got over, I said at the time, it was followed by pretty much a love service game for Roger Federer. And it was as though Andy Murray was pushing a car up a hill, and then suddenly Roger Federer was getting into it and just freewheeling down the other side and saying, right, up you go again then, Andy.
Yeah, and I think Murray deserves some sort of point or some. He deserves sort of an honorary set for serving a second serve ace on a set point. Because I think it was actually something we discussed in the Aegon Championships tennis podcast, wasn't it? Is a second serve ace on match point one of the most exciting thing in tennis? Well, it was only a set point, but it was sort of almost effectively a match point, and that was just one of the most exciting moments in tennis that I can remember. That it turned out not to be as crucial as everyone was saying on Twitter. Everyone was saying the match pivots right here. You know, if Murray can hold on to this, he'll probably break the next game. And lots of people tweeted Federer held on to his serve to love in the following game. So many people were saying, you know, 99% of players after squandering that many set points would go on to get broken in the next game. It's just the mentality and how momentum works in tennis. And Federer held to love, and Murray was serving again, sort of within a split second. You blinked and Murray was having to serve again after that monumental effort. And I suppose the match kind of did pivot there in a way, just not the way anybody was expecting.
No, because eventually Federer went on to take that second set by 7-5, and the third, there was a moment Richard Krajicek was sitting next to us and he looked at Murray at the end of that second set and he said, you know, I never thought I'd be watching this match and Murray would be the one who looks tired, because he's probably physically the fitter of the two men, but the mental, psychological, emotional pressure that Roger Federer was putting him under, it just exhausts opponents.
Yeah, I don't think there was very much physical fatigue there, or what physical fatigue there was would have been a direct consequence of the mental fatigue. I mean, I can't really conceive of the pressure that one feels facing anybody playing that way. I mean, and the frustration, the mental frustration of thinking, I'm playing really, really well here and I'm not getting a look in. I basically don't stand a chance. And also the frustration of playing somebody just at serving that well. I mean, so many rallies you're just not in. I mean, I want some verification of this, but I've heard his first serve percentage was 85% in that match, which is just, I mean, extraordinary. I mean, and I almost think if Federer doesn't come out and play like that in the final now, it will be a disappointment. That's the Federer everybody wants to see in the final, isn't it? And I think he can come out and play less well than that and still win, because I think he has gears to spare with that performance today to win the title here, especially given we seem to be looking at a slightly subpar Novak Djokovic.
Oh, hold on a minute. The guy's in the Wimbledon final. What's subpar about Novak Djokovic?
He didn't look himself today, body language-wise. Of the two players, Novak Djokovic looked the one to be unhappy. If you had to guess just on the basis of body language, who was the player that was two sets of love up today when Djokovic was against Gasquet, you'd probably have guessed Gasquet, because Djokovic just didn't look 100% himself. I think he is struggling a little bit for confidence. I think
he's in the Wimbledon final. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean,
Can you be in a Grand Slam final struggling for confidence?
Because he's the world number one, and he was really, really tested against Kevin Anderson. He didn't play particularly well to come through that. I think the fact that he's world number one and the toll mentally that took on Kevin Anderson brought him through that. He's not played brilliantly. There is this shadow of a shoulder problem. We don't know how bad that is.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
And I don't think, are you trying to suggest to me that Djokovic has played brilliantly this tournament and he's at his absolute best?
No, I don't think he's at his best, but I don't see how that
necessarily...
No, well, my point is that you're suggesting that may feed into the final. The final is a completely new match. I don't see... We've got more experience and evidence of Novak Djokovic showing that previous results on the way to a final mean nothing than anybody else. I mean, he is a different guy. I mean, his resilience, his ability to still produce. Crikey, you know, for me, he's still the favourite for the final.
Oh, well, you may well be right about the final being a completely different kettle of fish and performances up to now not being relevant. But equally, if Federer plays like he did today, I don't think Djokovic's performance or level is particularly relevant. I think Federer would beat Djokovic at his best if he plays the way he did today.
Yeah, but in order to do that, Federer, I believe, just as he did today, needs to win in straight sets. Because if Novak Djokovic takes it into the trenches, and I felt this today, that if Andy Murray had managed to extend that match and turn it into a physical battle, I felt it could turn. Federer just didn't allow that. His brilliance was so extreme that Murray just couldn't live with it. Now, I think that Federer has got to reproduce that in order to win this title. I don't think he can I think we saw it last year. He had wonderful spells in that final, but ultimately he just fell short physically, I felt, in that match against Novak Djokovic, who is the ultimate physical competitor. Now, can he dominate him? Can he dominate Novak Djokovic, the man that has been playing so well this year? That's the big question for me.
He can if he played like he did today. But hey, I do agree with you. I might give Federer a bit more slack and say that I think he could do it in four. But I agree, if it goes to five, the balance suddenly shifts dramatically into Djokovic's favour, regardless of how well Federer has played up to that point. But yeah, I mean, this is a Federer who, I mean, how on earth can Federer not be the favourite going into the final? I just don't see how that's conceivable, really, after today.
Well, Catherine Whittaker and I have expressed our shock. Now, straight from his deadlines, Mr. Simon Briggs of The Telegraph has just joined us here on the Tennis Podcast. Simon, we are still jaws on the floor at what we've seen from Roger Federer. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think anyone could argue with that. I mean, I've exhausted all the superlatives in the thesaurus. That's not an easy word for me to say, for my lisp. And I'm kind of now in a state of post-writing exhaustion. But it was a privilege to see it, wasn't it? Painful from the British point of view. We all want Andy to do well. We all hope for the best of British tennis. But it could be the best match Roger's played out here. I mean, I guess he must have played that level to beat Rafa when he beat him in the 2007 final.
Yeah, but I mean, I think ultimately he won that in five sets against Rafa. I mean, I think some of the performances that Federer has put in against Roddick over the years in the final, particularly 2005 here, spring to mind as mesmerising performances. But he was up against one of the best players in the world today, a player who, frankly, is a better tennis player than Andy Roddick. Mm. And Andy Murray did not play badly today, and his service first serve percentage was high. It was in the 70s, I think. And yet he lost in straight sets.
Yeah, I mean, Roddick was actually watching, so I listened to Roddick's thoughts, and that was interesting because he was saying, I didn't put as much pressure on Roger's serve as Andy is putting. But it wasn't really... I said it was like you're kind of scratching at a sheet of bulletproof glass. I mean, he wasn't making any mark. He was leaving no impact. Even when he held that service game of his own after 14 minutes, Roger then, 90 seconds, maybe 2 minutes to hold his own. And the other thing is that Roger's returns have surely never been as great. I mean, again, a technical point from Roddick. He said Andy had varied the second serve so well that he stopped him cheating and running around his backhand. He had to hit backhands. So what did he do? He hit backhand winner service returns. I mean, Roger's not supposed to do that. It's not even something that you consider when you sit down to work on the coaching before the match. It's not one of his artillery, but it was. I mean, it's kind of beyond my ken, really.
And Mats Wilander was saying very specifically that shot he has Stefan Edberg to thank for. That backhand return is something Stefan Edberg has been drilling him on for weeks and months now, and he has Edberg to thank for that one. And it was mightily effective today, because I do not think Murray was prepared for it.
Now, when you're watching these matches, you have a choice, don't you, Simon? You could either go to the press seats and be out in the open with the crowd, or, depending on, I guess, where you are with your deadlines, you could be in front of your computer with the screen on. And you mentioned you were listening to Andy Roddick. What was the atmosphere like where you were watching?
Well, I watched the first two sets on centre, and then I went back into the broadcast centre for the third. I thought at the first set, you know, Roger's aura was a factor because the crowd wasn't giving Andy anything, really. There was no extra impetus coming from being a British man on centre court. So, I mean, I'm not saying that Roger had a superior following. There just wasn't anything really. The crowd was almost silent. They were kind of gripped by the tension and the supreme tennis on show. They were almost dumbstruck. And then in the second set, they did get behind Andy, but it wasn't almost a partisan thing. It was more the thing that crowds do when they see a potentially short match that might get a bit longer if the guy who's losing can pull out a set. So they were getting into Andy's 14-minute service game in a big way, and they did get some big cheers then. But I never felt that it was a partisan crowd either way, and maybe it needed to be for Andy to kind of find some extra inspiration. I mean, he was so beaten down by those serves that he never quite got into that state of mind when he is in the zone. He was good, but not brilliant. But I mean, who can blame him?
Do you think he'll have many problems coming back from this and bouncing back. He's obviously got the Davis Cup coming up, and then he's got the run into the next slam, hasn't he, the US Open?
Yeah, Davis Cup has come probably at a decent time. I mean, he said he'd have two or three days when he's going to find this pretty hard to swallow because he finds any slam defeat very hard to swallow. But the team environment is something he loves, and let's give Leon Smith some credit because it is obviously a team environment that they all love. So as soon as they get into that, he'll be focusing on the French, and that's two semi-finalists. They'd be playing in the third, fourth playoff if it's the World Cup, isn't it? And now they're playing in the Davis Cup.
Absolutely, we will be bringing you a tennis podcast brought to you in association with the Telegraph. Every day from the Davis Cup by BNP Paribas next week. Now, before all that, we've got the two singles finals to look forward to. We've got the doubles final with Jamie Murray to look forward to as well. Garbine Muguruza against Serena Williams tomorrow. What are your thoughts on that one, Catherine?
I expect Muguruza to play really well and to give Serena Williams a run for her money and be extremely competitive. I expect a competitive final. But I do think Serena will win it, probably in three. I'm probably going for Serena in three. I think Muguruza will perform really well on the big stage. I love everything I'm seeing from her. She did pre-final press today and she looked extremely relaxed in a very natural way. She didn't look like she was trying to give off an air of being relaxed, but actually covering up for anything. She genuinely seemed like she belonged where she was going to be, where she's going to be tomorrow, but in a completely non-precocious or arrogant way. She just believes in herself and has sort of an inner calm about it all. So I think she will perform really well, but it's Serena Williams, isn't it? She's head and shoulders above everybody and she produces her best when it matters. So I do predict a Serena victory.
In three. Simon?
Well, look, Serena's the favourite, but I wouldn't rule out the possibility that she might find it very difficult to get over the line with everything that's riding on this one.
You can see that, can't you, with the superstitious nature of her answers at the moment. Do not mention the slam, she keeps saying. I don't want to talk about that.
She's kind of got a mini slam if she wins here, and then she's got a chance at the maxi slam in New York. If she won a second Serena slam, that's already pretty mind-blowing. Obviously, that means holding four slams, but not in the same calendar year. I think it could definitely affect her, and that is the one reason I don't think that Muguruza victory is out of the question. On the other hand, I guess for somebody who is relatively inexperienced, Muguruza might have her own problems closing. That's my thesaurus issue again. Serena probably in three, but could go either way.
Could be a great final. Could be a couple of great finals. We will preview the men's final in tomorrow's tennis podcast. We'll bring you our thoughts on the ladies' singles final tomorrow and also how Jamie Murray gets along as well in Saturday's tennis podcast. Brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Check out all of Simon's articles overnight and in the paper tomorrow morning. And everybody else that contributes to The Telegraph, always well worth doing. Have a look at wearetennis.com. We are supported by BNP Paribas, the bank for a changing world. We'll speak to you on Saturday.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.